This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
See Live Off the Record with Chicago Lang is sponsored by Advantage Insurance, the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, the Fincastle Media Group, RF Bank and Trust, Broadstar Assurance, and Scotiabank.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call on the show at any point, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. Or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show, or you can catch on BTC Flow channel 612. I am so delighted today to have a very special guest with me. Every time I've had occasion to interview this gentleman, even to speak with him offline, it's always been an enriching, conversation. And he has and continues to play a significant role in our country, in private life and in public life. I am here with the former Minister of Health for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas and former Member of Parliament for Elizabeth and vascular surgeon extraordinaire and just an all-around brilliant guy. Dr. Dwayne Sands is with us today. Welcome, sir. And the chairman, importantly, the chairman of the Free National Movement. Dr. Dwayne Sands, welcome, sir. You're still muted, sir. You're still muted. All right. Yes. Yeah, you're in. We can hear you.
There we go. Good afternoon.
We gotta watch your internet seems to be on you're coming in a little spotty, so doc, we have a technical difficulty on your.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you gotta learn your way around Zoom every time you use it, and we get so used to it. It's not exactly intuitive.
Okay,
can you hear me?
Yeah, but you're coming in spotty. Hello? You're coming in spotty. So your internet seems.
Don't know why that is.
Yeah, let the producer let us know how you're sounding. So producer, what are you hearing on that side? Go ahead, Doc. Go ahead, Doc. You can say something. Let's see what's happening. Dr. Sands, can you hear me?
Okay.
We're still having difficulty with your.
I don't know what happened, but good afternoon.
Okay. Let's.
I can hear you.
Hold on, producer. Let's take a break and see if we can iron out these technical difficulties. Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Dwayne Sands. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, saying you know that you're not alone. All of
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem. Just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Stay on Bahamas, it's your boy, Sawyer Boy. COVID is clearly unpredictable. It doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are. I'm young, and it still put a beating on me. I had no other option but to go to the hospital. I remember the doctor telling me if I had waited one more day, I wasn't going to come inside here alive. You don't want to be in the same position that I was in. Vaccines may not stop you from getting COVID, but it can stop you from getting COVID the way I had COVID. You don't want that way.
Babe. You mashed the car?
I ain't mashed the car. The lady who run into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. We're trying to get Dr. Dwayne Sands back and see if that holds up. If not, we will have to reschedule him for a time when we can get a better signal from him.
Hello. Hi. Good day. I don't know what happened, but let's try this.
Well, maybe what you could do too is don't use the video, because the video sometimes also diminishes the signal and we don't really have to use it. So maybe that'll help.
Okay.
How you doing, sir?
All good. You know, we're getting ready for this thing called the budget debate. So, you know, this is a whole different right now, you know.
Okay, well, it's some people might say different world, same world.
Well, you know, in this chair, it is a very different perspective on, you know, issues in the Bahamas. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
It's been now about what, maybe 6 months since you've assumed the chairmanship of the Free National Movement.
No, just 3 months, February.
3 months. Oh, just 3 months. All right. And what's been your take as chairman over the last 3 months? Where's the party? What is happening? What do you see?
I think we're in a good place, actually. Certainly the direction and the trajectory is good. And which is not to say that there's not a lot of work to be done. We all recognize there was a lot of work to be done. But you can see the fruit of that labor, and that's very positive.
I speak to people from time to time. I can't say I speak to a lot of people, but some people with whom I've spoken, I have to say most of these have been there, former F&M supporters. They still seem to have a sour taste in their mouths arising out of the last administration. Some have even queried whether or not the pain of what has been the leadership or the conduct of the party in the past is going to last for quite some while. Are you seeing, are you literally seeing new enthusiasm, interest, reconnection by people following the election?
Yes, and that has been very exciting. The mood is electric. As you know, the electorate in the Bahamas can be very demanding and doesn't suffer fools. So the last thing you want to do if you are presenting yourself for election is to come off in any way arrogant or dismissive, because you will be punished politically. But I find Bahamians to be very forgiving, you know. If there is a modicum of sincerity expressed, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. And if that sincerity is real and in abundance, they will embrace you. And I think what we are seeing is people coming back home to the Free National Movement. I am not going to say that everyone has come home, because they haven't. But some have.
And your journey as chairman would take you into the various constituencies, all the islands. Have you been able to move about the islands and get a sense of whether New Providence versus the Family Island has the same enthusiasm? Or what have you seen?
So Grand Bahama doesn't consider itself a family island. But my travels thus far has been New Providence and Grand Bahama. But this weekend, we cover Long Island and Cat Island. So, well, we've been into Andrus as well. So there are different concerns. Certainly, the expression of politics in the Bahamas, I believe, is very different in New Providence than it is in the Family Islands. Mm-hmm. And so you have to understand the local manifestations of political warfare, to use a bit of a cliche. But once you understand the challenges that political organizations or political supporters face in different communities, it helps you to calibrate your activity. And that's what we're trying to do.
I saw a photo recently of the leader, Mr. Michael Pintard, the former Prime Minister, Dr. Hubert Minnis. They were shaking hands, and then on the side of them, with a little space in between, was the former leader prior to Dr. Minnis, Right Honorable Hubert Alexander Ingram, who was also Prime Minister. They were shaking hands, as I said, the leader and the immediate past leader, in what would appear to be a burying of the hatchet. Is the hatchet buried and not in somebody's back?
Let us say that the relationship is cordial. The relationship is certainly civil. I didn't see a hatchet, nor did I see the outline of one. You know, important is that we all recognize that at different times, we are standard bearers for a brand. The Free National Movement will be 50 years old next year. Since that time, there have been a number of men, and we're working on that issue, a number of men who have led this organization. Four of them are still with us: Tommy Turnquest, Hubert Ingram, Hubert Minnis, and now Michael Pintard.
Well, there's one other one, unless you, I don't know, maybe not.
Maurice Moore, are you referring to, or?
No, I was Henry Bostwick, but maybe he was just leader of the opposition in the House.
Right, I don't think he was ever leader of the Free National Movement.
I got you.
So when you have an opportunity to get that amount of brain power and legacy, you don't want to waste that opportunity. We had an opportunity to have four leaders, a number of the deputy leaders, all just about all of the national chairs, the number of people missing were Elliot Lockhart was not there. Loretta Butler Turner was not there. Frank Watson was not there. And there was one other individual, Sims, that I do not know personally, who would have either been a chair, a deputy leader, or a leader. And we had a chance to have very candid conversations about where we are, where we need to go, acknowledging and recognizing that the brand, the organization, is greater than any single individual, no matter how lofty the post that they held. And I think it augured well for where we're headed. And there has been a commitment to support the current leader, Michael Pintard, in his endeavors to take this organization and, more importantly, this country to higher heights.
Okay. Let me ask you, before we get into budget matters, COVID-19. I would have to say, from my own impression, that people have essentially settled into a new normal life, and that COVID is not the overhang of darkness it once was. And so it seems like basically like people have moved on, even if COVID hasn't. What is your take?
I agree with you 100%. I am not sure that that is necessarily a reasonable or a good thing. Because as we see undulations in the impact of COVID, not just here, but around the world, you would expect that there would be a measured response based on how significant the threat is. Now, I don't know where that noise is coming from.
No, you're good. I don't know. We're not hearing anything on this side.
So when you would hope that people seeing increasing threats of COVID might increase their level of social distancing or mask wearing or hand sanitization or get tested if they were having symptoms. But that doesn't seem to be going on. And as a consequence, as we all try to get this economy more revved up and get back to our normal lives, sometimes we take some paths that are probably not entirely disciplined. What we're watching right now is another surge in COVID.
But isn't a part of the challenge of really trying to keep people serious about COVID the fact that there's a version of COVID that it really isn't all that serious? I mean, like, people are having it, getting it, and they're moving on, you know, out of cold, out of fever. Not what we saw in the early iteration of COVID-19.
Well, you know, I don't know how to answer that, except to say that what is gratifying is we're not seeing the number of deaths that we saw with the first few waves of COVID.
Or the level and seriousness of illness. And what I haven't been able to do, and maybe you can help us because maybe you have some data, but where is, to what extent is, has our immunization efforts, efforts and our exposure, people haven't already gotten COVID, effort has resulted in this diminished set of illnesses and death, and maybe even the fact that the new version or strand of COVID-19 isn't as potent?
We wish we knew what was coming down the pike. Omicron, BA1, BA2, BA3, BA4, while there have been deaths and hospitalizations, it was not perhaps as bad as Delta. What we are seeing, however, particularly in persons symptomatic, but even in people that aren't terribly symptomatic, is a problem of long COVID. And long COVID has been very, very impactful in a negative way to so many people. And so as this thing has evolved, we have not maintained the level of discipline, because I think we're sick and tired of the impact of COVID on our lives. But the threat continues. And when we look at the impact of COVID on our health systems, for instance, what it means in terms of getting other care, it has been so negative that health systems, particularly in the Bahamas, have not yet recovered. So I think what we need to do is to hang on, to relax some of the really draconian measures, but not to just give it up all the way. It's still reasonable to wash your hands. It's still reasonable to sanitize. If you're in a crowd with plenty of people, particularly on the inside, wearing a mask is definitely going to help you. And if we want to get our children back to school and stay in school full time, then I think we are going to need to be really disciplined, because that is an extremely important priority. If we have levels of COVID in our community that results in schools shutting down and classes being, I think the price that we end up paying in the medium and long term will be prohibitive. So it's changed. You're no longer doing this necessarily only to stop yourself from dying. You're doing it for some other good reasons. And then finally, I think, particularly in the Caribbean, many, many people have given up on the idea of vaccination. And I think that is to the detriment of the region and the people of the region. So that message now has to get back out there loud and clear. How we articulate it, how we spread the news, how we get people to get vaccinated is very important. And interestingly, it's extending beyond COVID vaccination. We're now finding it difficult to get people to bring their children for measles vaccinations, mumps vaccinations, et cetera. The anti-vaxxing movement, strengthened by COVID, has had a horrible impact for vaccine-preventable diseases. So we have some challenges.
We're gonna take a break, Dr. Sands, and when we come back, we'll turn our attention to the thing that you are going to be engaged in very shortly. So we'll come back after the break with that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shabai Walang, your host. I'm here with Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation.
Join us on June 8th for the annual RF Economic Outlook Conference, where speakers include Dex Torok, executive at Facebook and Google, John Citaletis, geopolitical consultant to the U.S. Department of State, Keith Herman, serial tech entrepreneur and blockchain expert, and global innovation strategist Sean Kanungo. Registration is now open. Find out more at rfeoc.com.
For 25 years, Advantage provided coverage for your most prized possessions, offering insurance plans to cover your vehicle, home, business, and boat with customized options that work with your budget. Now, Advantage says thank you to all our loyal customers and business partners over the past 25 years. Call 356-0285 or visit Advantage Insurance on Collins Avenue today. When every dollar counts, count on Advantage. Celebrating 25 years of service.
A local paper newspaper in Grand Bahama is back. Every Tuesday as a section of the Nassau Guardian. Available at local stores, gas stations, pharmacies, Western Bakery, and Bellevue Gifts. Daily and, of course, on Tuesdays too. Want to reach your Grand Bahama audience? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivar Gulang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I'm here with Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement, and we're going to talk about the budget. I know there are some people who want to talk more about COVID-19. That's a discussion for another day. That wasn't the reason why we have you on the show. But there is a 2022-2023 budget proposal before the Parliament of the Bahamas. What the Progressive Liberal Party administration is calling its the first of its real true budget. Your take on the budget as an overall statement, Dr. Sands? You're muted.
I want to give as objective a statement without hyperbole, without exaggeration, and as close to devoid of the spin. But I think George Bush Sr.'s description of the Reagan approach is appropriate. This is voodoo economics. And the numbers that they have put into this budget simply cannot be achieved.
Why do you say cannot?
Let's start with a simple discussion of the forecasted VAT revenue.
Okay.
It is anticipated that in 2022, that the government of the Bahamas will see an outturn of $1.4 billion of VAT in one calendar year. Now, VAT in the Bahamas across the board is at 10%. Now, if we say that all goods, services, and products are VATable, which they aren't, but just for the sake of argument, and you're going to collect $1.4 billion of VAT, your GDP at a 10% would have to be $14 billion. Now, if you go into the government's own budget booklet, or if you don't do an IMF document, et cetera, the gross domestic product of the Bahamas expressed in any terms is nowhere near $14 billion. And so, just on the face of it, it is impossible with a GDP of $11 billion to generate at a 10% clip $1.4 billion in VAT. It can't happen. It is mathematically or arithmetically impossible. Now, if you want to go back to a more granular approach, and compare revenues in the country at peak performance. So 2019, when our tourism was up to almost 7 million visits a year, and our total receipts, I think, were $2.3 billion. Total receipts now anticipated to be $2.8 billion. VAT was 12% then, it's 10% now. Your economy would have to be revved up to a level that I think most pundits would say is not achievable. And that is one of the reasons why the Moody's report has recently criticized or raised concern about the projected revenue performance. So I think this administration is trying to suggest to the Bahamas that the numbers are going to be better than could possibly be achieved. And I don't think there's any spin to my comments there. There are many people who would probably say, yeah, don't see how it can happen.
Well, you're right that Moody's certainly don't seem to believe it could happen, that's for sure. I expressed that it was immensely optimistic. And your take on it, I would say a little narrower than using, a little more narrower, because let me give you an example. In 1920, thereabouts, VAT was about $500+ million, right? Mm-hmm. And as a percentage of GDP, that was about 5% or so. To get 5% of GDP at $1 billion, your GDP numbers has to be a hell of a lot higher than $11, $12 billion. That is true.
And that assumes that you are 100% successful in capturing, collecting all of the VATable receipts. The other thing that is troublesome is that there's no provision for a hurricane, no provision for.
But that's the expenditure side. So before we go to the expenditure side, so the people are clear, there is
I'm talking even on the revenue side. So when we had. When we've had significant hurricanes, Dorian, and I hope, even though with climate change, it's possible, maybe even probable, that the world will see more superstorms. There was a significant impact on the revenue side in two of our largest economies, mm-hmm. island economies, Grand Bahama and Abaco.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have an unexpected event, it can impact revenue and not just expenditure.
Right.
If the world continues as it is with skyrocketing food prices, energy prices, et cetera, and attempts by central banks to rein will likely result in suppressed economic activity. The rollover or roll-off impact on other economies dependent on first world economies to spend can reduce our revenue. So, you got to put something in the equation for a rainy day. So best case scenario might be this. Worst case scenario is something different. And this budget is better than a best case scenario projection for revenue performance.
Okay. So on the revenue side, FNM says it's just too optimistic and also unrealistic.
Correct.
Okay. Now, what did you see on the expenditure side?
Well, there are some interesting small items that assume significance, but let's drill down on a surprising level of underfunding of social services. So here we are acknowledging that the cost of living has improved.
Improved?
Has increased. Sorry, the cost of living has increased.
Okay.
Sorry. And that is due to the Russian-Ukrainian conflict. It's due to the results of the ongoing results of COVID and the impact on the cost of shipping and so on and so forth. When you look at the impact on persons attempting to survive, I don't buy it that there's going to be a reduction in need or demand for social assistance. And so their budgeted level of social assistance, I don't think comes anywhere near where it needs to be.
Even at $50 million as a permanent feature of social assistance, we are still in such a state as to require much more than that?
I believe.
With the jobs being created, jobs coming on stream, the economy continuing to ratchet up, et cetera. You think we still need more than $50+ million in subvention for social assistance?
Absolutely. I think if you look at how far that stretches, there are still a number of persons with food insecurity in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. There are still a number of people with housing insecurity in the Bahamas. And there are people who find themselves having leveraged everything that they owned, everything that they had to get to this point. Mm-hmm. And so so they're tapped out. So to believe that with the stroke of a pen, with the click of a switch, that all of a sudden all will be well because everybody's going to be employed is just simply not reasonable. Mm. It's not a reasonable plan.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you know, we are people who, for reasonableness, look to data to help us, right? I mean, like, what is it out there that what data, what evidence out there will tell you that having in the height of the pandemic spent $100 million in social assistance, that we need now more than $50 million. I mean, you can always say that there are lots of people still hurting. We know that to be true, but what is to say we need more than $50 million worth of social assistance? What is the unemployment is reducing. We know that from the fact that more people are being engaged and hired. We know the economy is growing because we had almost 14% growth last year. An 8% or 6% projected for this year. What is there that says that is the case, though?
Well, again, I think when we talk about numbers, particularly growth, we have to look at the denominator and the denominator. So if you compare growth relative to 2021 and growth relative to 2020, you don't need to do much in order to grow at 6% or 10%.
But that's true. That's very true. But that notwithstanding, the fact is there is growth, which means that you are not staying in the bad position you were in. You are improving your situation. So what we look at is the trend. And the trend says that things are improving, then you can't. It's harder to say you're worse off and therefore need as much help as you did before.
No, I think that we have significant structural challenges.
Mm.
One of them is the cost of money.
Mm.
And if you look at our expenditure in this budget and in last budget, our expenditure is on the order of, trying to express this because I don't remember the exact number, I think some 28 or 30% in terms of the total amount of money being spent for money. So it was $500 and something million.
You know, like at $600 million, and that's $600 million on what is projected to be $3.3 billion. So you're talking about 20% roughly.
So but that has been increasing, okay? That total dollar amount. We don't know what is going to happen in the next 12 months.
Good or bad.
good or bad. But the those of us that listen to economic forecasts and are watching what is happening, particularly with inflation, and the common use of the term stagflation in the G20, you have to take any positive projections with a grain of salt right now.
Well, I don't know, because this is a 12-month budget, and so as you're talking about the immediate, we're not talking about the medium term, we're talking about the immediate, and the likelihood that over the next 12 months the Bahamas will be the subject of stagflation is slim to none.
Yeah, that's...
So we know that growth is in the offing for the Bahamas. Whether that growth gets tempered over the next 12 months, no, not likely at all, unless you have some significant turn in the pandemic, you have, as you have indicated, some significant storm or the other, et cetera. But seeing what can be seen, the prospect of growth for the country remains positive and reasonably positive.
Yes, but we'll, and again, I think we all are hoping and praying for astounding growth to deal with the structural challenges of unemployment, underemployment, the underfunding of state-owned enterprises, and so on and so forth. Because we have a lot of making up to do. In terms of sorting out our infrastructure, et cetera. If we were to look at the number of persons that we have still unemployed, we've got a lot of growth to bring those people into their rightful place in the economy. And so we need phenomenal growth in the Bahamas, not just 3% or 4%, we've got to do a lot better than that just to incorporate the many, many thousands of persons who want to participate in a meaningful way in this economy.
Well, I mean, you make a fair point to the extent that even 2019, when the Free National Movement was in office and things were much more normal, there was no COVID. Unemployment remained at about 9%, and that was so certainly in better times. We have not gotten back to pre-pandemic or 2019 economic activity. So even if we got back there, we are not guaranteed an unemployment rate below 10%.
Great, and bear in mind that we need the hard data as opposed to the speculation that we all engage in to say is it 20%, is it 18%, is it 16%? We don't know.
Yeah. Well, we have a call on the line. Let's take this caller. We do have just a couple of minutes left before we got to go to the news break. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, a pleasure. Good afternoon, Chivago. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks.
Okay, and good afternoon, former Cabinet Minister Dr. Sands. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. How are you? Sounds like Anton.
Thank you. And I should say national chairman for the Free National Movement. Congratulations on your positioning, by the way.
I'm
certain that you will give us trouble over here every step of the way. But what I wanted to add...
Hey, Anton, Anton, I just want to remind you, we have 2 minutes before the break, okay? Just so you know, so you can pace yourself.
Okay, cool. Going back to the first part of the conversation relating to the government's projection on collection for VAT, what I wanted to add is that I feel confident that the government, that my government will hit its target, because when you look at several of the measures the government has implemented, being one being the reintroduction of the Revenue Enhancement Unit, I think that some of the companies that owe VAT, that have the potential or the ability to pay it back, I think that will go towards that set of monies that the government is projecting. I believe that a lot of the revenue on the bread basket item, the bread being, will go towards contributing towards that. I believe that the government has several investment projects on the horizon that will bring great revenue back in through VAT. I believe that will go towards the horizon. The government's aggressive housing program, the FTX program through FTX and other investment companies. I believe that when you look at what the VAT was in 2021, I was trying to look at 2019 before COVID, but last year, comparison to what VAT was in 2020, VAT actually jumped by 100% over the first 6 months of 2021 versus what it was during the same period, 2020. It jumped from 250 something million to just under $600 million, or somewhere around $580 million. And so that's a 100% increase in the VAT performance in our country. And we have an economy that's on the rise, that's rebounding. Tourism is getting stronger. We're expanding in new markets. And so I believe that we have.
I gotta go. Gotta finish up for me. I really have to go.
Thank you,
Shabako. Go ahead. All right, Dr. Sands, we'll have an opportunity to speak to that once we come back, and Anton makes some data-driven points. We'll see. When we come back, we can ask you to address it. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabako Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today. I'm here with Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement and former Minister of Health in the Minister Administration, a member of Parliament for Elizabeth. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Sands. We're talking about the budget 2022-2023. We'll be back after this news break. Through the storm, whatever, let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I am here with Dr. Dwayne Sands, and we're talking about the budget. I don't know if you recall some of the comments made by Anton, Dr. Sands, but
I do, and I'd like to make this as easy for the listening audience to follow. So let's go to fiscal year 2018-2019. Our GDP was at, I believe, around $13 billion, and we had 890 receipts, or 6.9% of GDP. Now projected 2022-2023 to get $1.43 billion on a economy of the same size, which would be an outturn of 10.8%. So what has fundamentally changed to go from a VAT outturn of 6.9% back then to 10.8% now? Anton mentioned a number of little things that I don't believe changes the efficiency of our economy. I was shocked that he would say that back on breadbasket was a necessary part of the fiscal strengthening of the economy, because we recognize that that is a painful oppressive or regressive approach to raising money. I highlighted that as a major pillar of the path to $1.4 billion.
Now the one thing that the Free National Movement will have to contend with is this, though. In 2000 17, 18. In 2017, 18, the provisional actual revenue for VAT was $686,770,000. The Minnis administration had a approved forecast revenue for 2018-2019 for VAT of $1,059,000,000.
Right? Okay.
So that administration it was forecasting over $1 billion in VAT revenue in the years to come, right? So assuming the economy in 2018-19, when that $1,059,000,000 VAT revenue projection was had, was say 3% or so, because that was the forecast above the 2017-18. If the Progressive Liberal Party's administration can get the economy over the next 12 months to what the Free National Movement was suggesting it would be in 2018-2019, they would have a value-added tax forecast similar to what you had when you were in office.
But a forecast turn make.
No, but that's the point is, on one administration, if you can look at the economy and think I can go from 686 million to a billion, and somebody says, okay, I see a similar economy coming and I think I can make the billion from 500 some million, then I'm saying, what's the difference?
I think the difference here is that we have shown, using their own numbers, The numbers that are written in the this year's budget document, that using the GDP forecasts and understanding how you derive value-added tax, the two numbers cannot coexist and both be true.
Dr. Sams, really honestly, let's look at it for a moment, right? In the 2018-19, the forecast, the economy was $11,320,000,000. And that was the one on which the $1 billion VAT forecast was being made. This forecast is calling for an $11 billion economy over the next 12 fiscal months. So it's very similar to what was being said then. And so the yield would have been on the same economy. Now, whether that happens or not is a different story, but the yield is on the same economy. The forecast was on the same economy generated by the same Ministry of Finance technicians.
I'm looking at the document, and I agree with you that some of the forecasts historically have not been in line with the performance, and that and we all know the vagaries of financial forecasting.
Sure.
And I am not in the business of making disparaging comments about civil servants who do the best that they can with the imperfect science. What I am suggesting, however, is that when you see credit agencies or like Moody's and others state specifically in their very diplomatic terms that these numbers appear to be a little bit more optimistic than we think they ought to be, take that very, very seriously.
Yeah, but I've been there. I've been where these folks are, and they've said that about ours. They've said it about yours when Mr. Turnquist was there. We tend to be more on the optimistic side. Now, mind you, don't get me wrong. I think that this 19% revenue increase is really optimistic. I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying that kind of language from them, they expect more conservatism. And what they also do is they expect you, their comfort comes when you say I'm taxing more, because taxation is sure legal obligation of citizens to pay. When you start telling people, oh, I'm going to collect more, or, you know, the economy is going to give me more, et cetera, they're not buying that from you. They're not buying.
No, agreed. I mean, the legal commitment or requirement to generate a certain level of revenue gives more strength to the view that you are going to achieve your target, your deficit target within a certain time.
Yeah, definitely.
But there are some indicators that you're very, very serious. And one of the challenges is whether or not you are conservative in your recurrent expenditure.
Hmm.
And certainly we haven't talked much about that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to get to. But just before we get there on that side, let me ask you, did you see any positives in the budget? I mean, anything that you said, you know what? Nice going. Okay.
No, I think the decision to reduce duty on a number of healthy foodstuffs is something to be applauded. I raise my hat to that decision. I think it's going to all go well for the health of Bahamians. And so, yes, that's something that I certainly support. I was looking in the budget, honestly, for some signature or progressive programmatic approach to young people.
Hmm.
You asked me for things that I liked. and unfortunately, that caused me to think that I didn't find anything much for young people here. So
wasn't there an additional $5 million allocated to youth sports and culture?
Again, when I talk about programmatic increases or commitment to the single largest voting bloc in the country, it wasn't there.
Yeah, but you're going to get, but that detail the prime minister wouldn't have gotten. You got to get that from the Minister of Youth, Sports and Culture when he gives his.
Budgets are about choices. Budgets are about vision. And I would have expected in the budget presentation, and I was listening intently from start to finish.
Fair point.
And I didn't hear it.
So, fair point. That's a fair point. I got you.
I'm trying to avoid too much partisan pejorative commentary. But, you know, in terms of other things that I found positive, I think the commitment to improve wages is certainly going to be beneficial to the civil servants who benefit from it.
Mm.
And I think we should all celebrate when any of us do well. The flip side of that discussion is, you know, what happens to those persons in the private sector and, you know, what that does to the appetite for revenue. Those targets, because the more you spend, the more you got to earn, the more you got to collect.
But that increase isn't for all civil servants. Eh? It was to increase the minimum wage in the public service, which most people in the public service make above the minimum wage.
Correct. But
you have lots of civil servants who say, okay, well, cost of living has gone up, and that's going to impact me. And I'm grateful for those people who are going to get a better minimum wage. But, you know, my pay has been eroded in terms of purchasing power because of inflation, too. So what about me?
Right. Now, you know, forgive me for jumping around, but as we have this conversation, as we get into some of the granular details of some of the ministries, we see some fairly bizarre changes in forecasted expenditure, particularly in the Ministry of Finance. Now, that may be that they have just now shifted where this money is going to be spent. But certainly, some of the numbers are pretty significant, pretty dramatic in terms of the expenditure for contracts and other things coming out of the Ministry of Finance. But we will certainly, during the debate and then in the head-to-head, get clear-cut justification for these changes to make sure that they are reasonable and appropriate.
Any other observations on the expenditure side that concerns you?
Again, in the first pass, I think those are the things that jump out. Hmm. You know, we're going through this budget with a fine-tooth comb because it's a large document, as you know, and comparisons column by column becomes very important to understand exactly what it is that's happening.
So you have overall a budget that is projecting a GFS deficit of about $564 million. That will be a reduction over what they would call the former administration's budget of deficit of $758.6 million. And in the year prior to that, it would have been $951 million. And then before that, it was $1.3 billion in deficit. So it's going in the right direction, no?
Well, you know, if we look at the GFS deficit, as you've mentioned, from 415 in 2017, 2018, down to the lowest that it's been in recent memory at 215 million, and then up with the in the aftermath of Dorian and COVID, up to 799 million, and then 1.3. Expect that it would. Now, the issue is how do you play the hand that you're dealt, and whether or not that rate of reduction of the deficit is aggressive enough, given the circumstances and the outstanding debt to GDP. That's a philosophical discussion that we can all have. You know, some would say that the expenditure in this budget is not conservative enough. That this is recurrent expenditure, not capital expenditure. So we would want to see expenditure that is going to positively impact the country for a lengthy period of time, as opposed to just simply, you know, increasing your recurrent expenditure. So, you know, to have a deficit, projected deficit of 600, let me look at the exact number so that they don't say I'm trying to mislead, 564 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
Projected. So and that's assuming that you hit your target with VAT, that you hit your target with real property tax, that you hit your target with all of your revenue streams, and that you don't have any unexpected expenditure. You don't leave yourself a whole lot of room.
They are suggesting, however, that the debt to GDP ratio is going down if all of this transpires. So again, every budget is a forecast proposal. And so, you know,
I smiled at that because it is, you know, the debt to GDP is going down on the basis of restating the GDP, right? But the total debt has increased by hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
When was debt restated? When was GDP restated?
Well, I mean, your debt to GDP is redefined on an annual basis, eh? So, and then, you know, there are many, many different ways to state GDP, whether you base it in current prices or constant prices or what have you. But
yeah, but all of those figures are given in the fiscal summary so that nobody has to compare apples and oranges. They are always those constant.
Our national debt continues to increase, and if you add the direct charge for government at the conclusion of this fiscal year, so on June the 30th, 2022, we will have added an additional $700-800 million to our national debt, right? Granted, the debt to GDP has improved, is less, but it is still in a very precarious range. We're still in the red zone. And so while we can say that it's not in the Barbados range or not in the Jamaica range, it's still not in a good place.
And it hasn't been for all of the administration's term. It hadn't been in a good range for a portion of the Ingram administration term when this ratcheting up started, really, because of the Great Recession. So we have not been in striking distance of the 35%, 40% debt to GDP ratio we enjoyed in the 90s for a long time. And we have been.
I put it to you that in the lead up to the hurricane season of 2020?
Mm-hmm.
No, that was 2019. I think Dorian was 2019. The fiscal discipline adopted by the Minnis administration resulted in a trajectory that I think was the most promising in recent memory. Now, you know, there were the unexpected natural disasters and international pandemic that totally derailed that program. But, you know, at some point, if we are going, you know, hyperbole is not helpful here. But a level of discipline to bring our fiscal affairs in order to get us closer to debt to GDP of 75, 70, 68, 65 is absolutely in order. Now,
so you're suggesting that if the Free National Movement was in office, first of all, your revenue forecast would not have been as rosy. So therefore, you would have had a lower revenue projection. Your expenditure would not have been as rosy. So you would have been spending less, and your GFS deficit would have been lower. So that the growth rate of the national debt was slowing down. So in essence, you would have been in a contractionary mode. So people could expect less in the way of government intervention. That's what I hear you saying.
No, I am saying that you would have expected, certainly with the ministers of finance with whom I was a colleague, a more realistic statement of the expected outcome.
How is that realism, not what I just said? Realism means less revenue projected, less spending, because you said you have to be more conservative, and then that means a lower deficit. All of that is not expansionary fiscal policy. That's contracting. That's smaller. People have to get less.
I misheard what you were saying at the last point because the signal cut out.
Okay.
But the idea is, I think Bahamians want and expect as accurate as possible. And this is not...
Dr. Sands, seriously though. Accuracy in forecasting is like playing, is wordplay, because it's forecasting. It's talking about the future. What you want are reasonable forecasts. And I'm asking you a very simple question, because you told us the projections were too ambitious, and so did the Moody's, and I said the same thing, that the expenditure, you had expected it to be a little bit more restrained. And the deficit, you said, could have been, some might argue, more aggressive. So I'm saying the alternative to what you just said is lower revenue forecast, lower spending, lower deficit made you do less.
So you streamline your priorities.
Okay.
You get into language that ends up having taken on almost curse word significance. So if you say belt tightening nowadays, that's a pejorative. Okay. So we don't talk
it's a pejorative in an environment where leaders do not want to be frank with the people who have the power.
Amen. Amen.
Right? So that's what's happening here. And I mean, I see you yourself trying to be careful. And I understand that caution, because people do react to belt tightening words, do react to disciplined words, etc. But you just said they want accuracy. If they want accuracy, don't they want truth?
I would hope that people want truth, because it is when you get the actual outturn, and you get the actual numbers, when we look over the relationship between forecast and actual, it tells a very interesting story about the relationship between the forecasted outturns and the actual outturns. And I would put it to you that there have been some administrations that have had a closer relationship between their forecasted outturns and then others.
The truth is, and I've been in that position, and you have a more sensitive situation, so you may not want to say, the truth of the matter is, ministers of finance of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas have tended to be more liberal than conservative in revenue forecast. They have tended to overshoot the revenue forecast. And there's a reason for that. And it's the same reason that you are yourself maybe tentative about saying some things, because they do not want to present to the Bahamian public a less than optimistic picture, because people take that personally. So they try to, you know, on a probability curve, you can pick different points of pessimism or optimism. So they pick the one that's more optimistic rather than less.
So we find ourselves right now, we are all in this together. Every single Bahamian, whether you're on one side of the political divide or the other, needs this economy to thrive. We need this economy to be humming along at a phenomenal clip, that we avoid the natural disasters or man-made disasters or any missteps. And so the dialogue in which we engage has to be a productive one, is helpful. That this is not just taking pot shots at the government or otherwise, because we are literally tied in this together.
All right, well, listen, we have to take a break and pay some respect to our sponsors, but we'll be back after this break. You're listening to ZLive. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm here with Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement. We're talking about the budget. We'll be back after this break.
take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Switch for better when you move your mortgage to Scotiabank.
Leave behind that old mortgage plan and open the door to a low interest rate. No payments for up to 2 months and cash back of 2.5% of the mortgage amount up to US $10,000. And guess what? It gets better. Apply for your Scotiabank credit card and enjoy a low 9.99% introductory rate for the first 6 months. Switch for better and upgrade your mortgage today with Scotiabank. Offer ends June 30th, 2022.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem. Just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises residents of Pinecrest Drive, South Beach East, that the corporation will commence improvement work on Tuesday, May 31st, 2022, for a duration of 5 weeks, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. During this period, there may be some interruption in the water supply, road closure, and detours around the work area. Motorists are advised to avoid the area where possible. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused and appreciates your support as they work to improve their level of service.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. But I'm speaking with Dr. Dwayne Sands, the chairman of the Free National Movement, and we're talking about the 2022-2023 proposed budget by the Davis administration that says that this is its first real budget, having inherited in midstream, you might say, or so, the previous administration's budget. Didn't the government have an opportunity in the mid-year to make some adjustments to the budget and own it some more?
If you remember, there was a supplementary budget that put their stamp. And the prime minister would have made it very clear that he was going to make some adjustments to the budget that he had inherited. They would have had, let's say, a budget that they inherited with an asterisk. But this is absolutely their budget. We look at it as such. We understand that there are some concerns about having their hands tied. And you may recall over the last 3 years that there were a number of financial bills, Public Financial Management, Procurement Act, Debt Management, et cetera, that would have constrained this government ways from doing certain things in certain ways. And we find it very interesting that they have willingly chosen to ignore the requirements of those pieces of legislation.
Give an example of that. What do you mean?
So let's take the Procurement Act. The Procurement Act requires a level of public transparency for the expenditure of the people's money for contracts above a certain amount. Here we are now, 9 months, I believe, into a new administration, and they have not complied with those rules for gazetting their process that they use for procurement. And so, you know, you got to ask, have they followed the rules? Was there a level of transparency? Was there a fair and even playing field for all the participants in the bidding process?
And these were rules written under the Minister administration?
Written by the Minister administration, presented in the House of Assembly, and voted on not just by the Minister administration team or the FNM, but also by the other side. So they would have supported this legislation, and then no less than the Prime Minister and the current Financial Secretary has said that they are not going to follow the law.
And you are satisfied that these are rules that the Minister administration followed entirely in its tenure?
No, I don't believe that the Minister's administration followed the rules entirely. But, you know, two wrongs does not a right make.
Okay, so long as we are conceding wrongs, and I agree with you 100%. One person doing it doesn't make it do it wrongly. It may give a gotcha right, but it don't give you a right.
You're saying that the challenge is Bahamians want to know that their hard-earned tax dollars are getting value for money. That it is being directed on the basis of a meritocracy. This peer-reviewed, very widely disseminated, and there was a lot of consultation on this legislation, was intended to change in a fundamental way the way we did business, to help take some of the politics out of spending the people's money.
You mean some people want to know that their monies are being spent on a meritocracy basis? Because I know FNM and PLP and other people who don't give two hoots about the procurement as long as they procure the contract. And them and their friends and their workers and the others who support them don't care about procurement so long as it's our side that got the procurement when you all did it.
That's real talk. That's real talk right there. You won't get an argument from me. But if we are talking about, I'm real enough to acknowledge it is impossible to do this thing perfectly, but you have to make an effort.
In fact, the comment I made was less for politicians than it was for a society to understand that they put pressure on politicians. You've been there, I've been there. They put pressure on politicians to get things done for them because and don't care too much about how it's done, because at the end of the day, you heard it. You tell me if you haven't heard this expression. Yeah, yeah, all right. It ain't long now. You can need me. Have you heard that before?
Oh, absolutely. So it is. You are performing your duties well if I get my contract back. But the end result is that we are now beyond $10 billion in debt owed by every man, woman, and child in this country. It limits the options that we have for buying a new hospital or building a new hospital or more schools or increasing salaries or moving to a solarization project or fixing some of the horrible challenges that we have anywhere within the Bahamas, because you got to pay for that debt. You got to service that debt. Service, sorry, is the single highest line item in the budget.
Yeah, but it is also a line item, some would argue, increased by more than $2 billion by an F&M administration within a two-year period.
Yeah, I don't move away from that. And I'm sure that the response of the cabinet that would have presented that budget would have been two words, Dorian and COVID.
Are we still in a pandemic?
We are. We just don't want to admit it. But, you know, we are still feeling massive effects, particularly with supply chains. The cost of construction has gone way up. Goods and services, and now, you know, fuels have gone up, and that has a knock-off effect on everything. So the pandemic and its effects are still with us and will probably be with us, even if the number of COVID-19 cases drops to an irreducible minimum or becomes like the flu or the common cold. It'll be with us for probably another 2 or 3 years, unfortunately.
Maybe that's why Davis administration says that it's, they got to keep the spending high and, you know, try and get that revenue to do it.
Well, you know, we talk about countercyclical spending, and countercyclical spending demands that there are cycles. You can't be spending all the time, because then you're defeating the purpose. At some point in time, after you spend, you've got to rebuild the coffers.
We got to take our final break, Dr. Sands. When we come back, I want to pierce into some items that were announced by the Davis administration and get your reaction to them. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
History has taught us that in crisis, humanity will always respond with innovation. What world-changing technologies will emerge from humanity's latest challenges? How can the Caribbean capitalize on the metaverse, blockchain, hybrid work, and more? Join us at the RF Economic Outlook Conference under the theme Future Forces, World-Changing Ideas, where we will explore the future of work, investments, technology, and more. The journey begins on June 8th. Reserve your seat today at www.rfeoc.com.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care, for every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Preparing for a hurricane can make safeguarding lives. By knowing what actions you should take to reduce the effects of hurricane disaster, get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, surge protectors, essential supplies, plus so much more before the storm, after the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and more. The Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide will help to make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity plus 15 radio commercials. Contact us today, 302-2300, or your account executives. Will you be prepared?
Yeah. Imagine driving your dream car, doing all the things you never thought you could, like perfecting your parallel parking skills or picking up your date. Everyone loves to dream. Stop dreaming. Start driving with a brand new offer from Scotiabank. With an auto loan from Scotiabank, benefit from no payments for up to 2 months, a low interest rate up to 9 years to repay, and free insurance for the first year up to 2.5% of the loan amount. Promotion ends June 30th, 2022. Stop dreaming and stay with an auto loan from Scotiabank.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivar Gulla, I'm your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM for the remaining moments of the show, where we're talking with Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement. You know him, former Minister of Health, vascular surgeon in this country, and former member of Parliament for Elizabeth. Doc, the government mentioned that it's going to air a routine some funds from revenues raised in the Family Islands for the Family Islands in a creative, innovative. What do you think?
I think the devil is in the details. And so while there is probably some equanimity or some fairness there, you wonder whether, and again, I got to be very cautious about my choice of words, whether it does not make it easier to avoid absolute compliance with the fiscal legal requirements in the country. Because understand that revenue goes into the consolidated fund, and from there, expenditure follows guidelines for the Financial Audit Administration Act, among others. Once you start putting these things into a fund, the oversight is diluted. And I see the possibility of mischief.
But it all comes back into the ambit of the Treasury, doesn't it? We have the environmental levy, which is, again, the consolidated fund is the description of the government's accounts.
Yes.
It's collected, it goes into an account, it's part of the consolidated fund, but it's earmarked by law for certain purposes, the proceeds of crime, same thing. So how would that be any different?
You know, there are already mechanisms for providing funding to the Family Islands. Local government is one. The process of creating a budget, defending a budget, provide some protection to the public for the expenditure of their tax dollars.
Yes, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you now say that, look, we're gonna take let's say $20 million. $20 million is now gonna go into a fund, and it's gonna be administered by this council or this body. And the ordinary controls that we use, these funds are not going to be subjected as rigorously to that. I think we have some challenges already with expenditure and control of expenditure. It just, without the checks and balances, I would be very concerned.
So you think it's preferable simply to allocate new sums of monies to Family Island local government in the budget and let them go ahead and do what they can do for their island?
That is one mechanism that we have accrued a level of experience and expertise. You don't necessarily need to keep rediscovering the wheel. There's also the example of the Ministry for Grand Bahama. You could imagine that there could be another ministry that has a specific remit for all of the other family islands. And you accomplish the same thing.
Which is, there's been a ministry responsible for family island affairs before.
Precisely. But you don't run the same risk of potential challenges with control and oversight.
Well, actually, one of the things that that proposal does, though, is it brings new awe. It demands new transparency in government revenue, because I would guarantee you today, I couldn't even tell you, you couldn't tell me how much revenue is raised in each family island. Because if I'm going to earmark or retain X percent of anything, I have to know what the base is. So I have to know how much revenue has gotten out of Ackman's, how much has gotten out of Cat Island, Long Island, et cetera. And I suspect if you get that information, it would be shocking and alarming to see that in the net, the government actually pays more to these islands than it takes out.
Well, I think if we could mine the data that we have on the basis of the TIN numbers, I mean, you...
We can get the numbers. That's not my point. My point is it's not distributed that way today. So if you're going to do this that the government is proposing, you will therefore now have to present that number to say X percent of this represents that.
I am not impressed that this administration is minded to err on the side of transparency. And I've said on the basis of their wanton disregard for the existing fiscal legislation, until such time as they acknowledge that the law is not something that you have the volition to follow or not, to now add another instrument that, I'm not confident that it is going to move us in the right direction. So it is a threat. It is a risk that we're adding. The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
The government is adjusting some taxes and fees. It seems mostly on the high-end income earners, and many of them will be international places. What are your thoughts on that?
They ought to increase or return VAT to 12% on high-end properties and eliminate the VAT on breadbasket items. We've said that over and over. So they have demonstrated by their activity that there is an ability to target specific items in our economy for differing rates of taxes. And so it destroys the argument that you cannot once again go back to zero rating on breadbasket items. But, you know, go ahead. They're adding some degree of a progressive approach to taxation so that those that can afford more pay more. But, you know, carry it even further and ease the burden on the most vulnerable in our community and get rid of that on prescription medications and breadbasket items.
This text says, Mr. Sands is absolutely correct regarding transparency in the Procurement Act. Let the public see who is behind these large contracts. It still needs to happen. We want and are entitled to know. This text says even the purchasing department and government needs to sign non-compete agreements with vendors, as that is a source of corruption as well. Transparency and accountability of the people's money, says that person. This text says, good gentleman, Dr. Sands, can say what is the one thing you as a former MP wish the FNM could have completed, and why wasn't it completed? And if elected as government today, what will be the first you tackle?
Boy, that's a very good question. And I got to try to avoid personalizing this. I'm disappointed that we did not get the expansion of national health insurance to include catastrophic coverage. And, you know.
So you like the allocation of $10 million for catastrophic health coverage in this budget?
It's a start. It won't go all the way, but I applaud it.
Okay.
In terms of
why didn't you do more in terms of expanding catastrophic health coverage to NHI?
I believe that that advice was being given we didn't have the financial headroom expand the program. I think it's a very important that we move as a country to get to universal health care in a reasonable time frame.
So if you go back, would that be one of those you jump on as the person is asking?
Absolutely. I think that is an important step moving forward. The other thing that I think
you've got 1 minute, you've got 1 minute, so you get your parting words.
The other thing is we even in this conversation we haven't talked about the problem with pensions, and that is the 9 million pound gorilla that this budget has not dealt with either. NOAA has it addressed the issue with NIB. And I'm hoping that in the exchange in the House of Assembly, that there is considerable attention and debate attached to that critical part of the gap in our country.
Dr. Sands, you're always a great guest. You're always forthright, and you're always articulate, and you're always thoughtful and think through your issues. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for coming on and joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Gulang, your host. We had as our guest today Dr. Dwayne Sands, chairman of the Free National Movement. Good evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. He spares our lives. Bye-bye.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid.